Fifth Aliyah of Parshas Vayikra tells us about the concept of shogeg and the idea that there is an obligation of a korban for a chet b'shogeg. Pasuk Beis tells us, Daber al b'nei Yisrael le'mor nefesh kisechta b'shgaga mikol mitzvos. Hashem asher lo se'asena v'osa me'achas mehena. So here the idea of bringing a korban for an avera, despite the fact that it was done b'shgaga, so there are various explanations as to why that is. So one might ask that if the avera wasn't intentional, so perhaps there shouldn't be a need for anything. So among the explanations, the Ramban explains that there is still the creation of some kind of spiritual blemish, and that creates an impediment towards the relationship with God, and that needs to be addressed. And that's what the korban does, and that's in order to address that. And he addresses this also in the Shaar HaGemul, as does the Rambam in Hilchos Shgagos, in Parakei Halacha Vav, that it's a different idea, that a shogeg is not completely innocent. Just like we find by a Ritzeach B'shogeg, we don't assume that a Ritzeach B'shogeg is completely innocent. It's an in-between category. Somebody who did not look to do the Avera, that would be amazing. But a shogeg essentially is not responsible, is not careful enough. Just to describe some of the categories, there are a number of different categories. Some of them are subject to disagreement as to what exactly they describe, to use generally accepted definitions. So if, let's say, you turn on a light on Shabbos on purpose, so then that would be amazing. Let's say you trip and you hit the light by accident, so that's not a shogeg, that's an ones, that you have no intentionality at all and no real involvement in it all. Let's say you just walk into the room and you're not even thinking what you're doing, and just by habit you turn it on. That's probably even less than a shogeg. That's probably called masasek. There's also another category, which is subject of a machlokes. Let's say you think that you're allowed to turn on the light on Shabbos. So that's called an omer mutter. And that's a machlokes, what the status of that is. But a shogeg, somebody who forgets that it's Shabbos, or forgets that he's not allowed to turn on the light on Shabbos, so he's not careful enough. So that's not totally innocent. It's not intentional, but it's not totally innocent either. So that's a lack of zehirus and a lack of yira. So that requires some level of atonement, some level of being addressed. The Alshuch has a different understanding, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects tzaddikim from sinning, and therefore there is some kind of general responsibility, not necessarily specifically for this, but the fact that there was an aver b'shogeg means that there is something wrong with this individual's character, and it happens to be expressing itself over here. That perhaps it could have a little bit of a Purim connection. The Gemara Maseches Megillah says that the pasuk in the end of Megillah Esther, that Mordechai was ratzli l'rov e'achav, that Mordechai was somebody who was admired by most of his brethren, and the Gemara understands that pasuk to mean parish menu mikzas Sanhedrin, that some of the Sanhedrin was not a fan of his, separated from him, and the Gemara says that they felt him to be guilty of bittul Torah. And the Gemara derives from there that apparently Talmud Torah is more important than Atzilas Klal Yisrael. So Rav Gedalia Shor has drasha about this. It's hard to understand. Clearly Mordechai had to do what he did to save Klal Yisrael. How could you hold him responsible for his Bittul Torah? So the understanding that they must have had was that, yes, he was in a situation where he had to do what he had to do, but maybe there was something lacking in him that he found himself in that situation, that had he been fully worthy, he wouldn't have had to been distracted from his learning. So there's a guilt that's associated with the character in its totality that then manifests itself in this particular situation. So to hear the Al-Sheikh is saying that, okay, this was inadvertence, but had he been a total tzaddik, he wouldn't have been brought into the situation, like the Gemara says in Chulin, that even the behemoths of tzaddikim don't end up eating something that's aser, that there's a certain protection that comes to people who are of a high level. So that gives us basically three understandings of why there should be a kapara for somebody who doesn't have era, even though it's bishogeg. Rav Shamshon of Fal Hirsch and others note that when someone does an avera that has a punishment of kares, it does it on purpose, so then there is this consequence of kares, which means they're cut off, and that can only be addressed through Yom Kippur. So if it's done bishkaga, so then it doesn't have that impact, but it does have some kind of partial disconnect, and therefore there is a need for a korban to bring one closer. You could also suggest that if shkaga reflects a general lack of awareness, so then a korban is about elevating the awareness, about bringing one more in contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and creating greater God consciousness. So therefore, it memela creates a corrective to whatever was not fully plugged in. And the Gemara Masechet Shavuos and Daf Yedzayin Amud Beis notes that this does not apply to an onus. As we just mentioned, onus is a different category where a person really had no control over his actions, less than a shogeg. The Noda de Behuda in his Chuvus in Yerodeya in Sadi Zayin, in Sadi Bav, asks about how this relates to a situation where Bezdin paskins that should also have been considered a onus because one's obligated to listen to Bezdin, and yet we find the korban there. So that's the kasha he asks on the whole situation. But separate from that question, so the idea that there isn't a korban for an onus, so that's interesting in terms of how that relates to these explanations, because as the Sefer Chavetzal Sasharon discusses, so if you say that it's because a shgaga has a korban due to some kind of lack of care, so then you can understand why that doesn't apply to an onus. An onus literally had no control at all. But if the idea is there's a spiritual stain, so then you might have thought that that does attach to an onus also. So for example, if you were to say, to give an example from other areas, let's say eating non-kosher food has a spiritual stain, even if you don't do it intentionally. So then wouldn't that apply also to an onus, you would think? So according to that explanation, you'd have to say that even the spiritual stain only comes where there is some level of responsibility. But if there's no level of responsibility at all, so then maybe there isn't even any kind of a spiritual impact. So this language at the end of the pasuk, me'achas mehena, is a little bit of a unusual kind of language here. And the Gemara Masechet Shabbos on Daf Ayin uses this as one possibility for the source of the concept of chiluk malachos on Shabbos. The idea that even though the Torah doesn't spell out the various malachos, the 39 malachos are not identified specifically on Shabbos, but we have various possible sources to tell us that they are considered to be distinct from each other. So there are different ways in which one can be liable for a shogeg on Shabbos. So if one is shogeg on the whole concept of Shabbos, let's say somebody does a number of malachos on Shabbos, but he forgot that it's Shabbos at all, or he forgot that Shabbos exists, so then he'd only be liable for one korban. But if he forgot about a specific malacha, so then, and did that malacha and another, or a few others, malachos, so then he could be liable for a number of korbanos. So that's because there is this concept that the malachos are considered to be distinct from each other. The Gemara also uses this to possibly a source for the concept of toldos, which is also relevant only for the possibility of additional korbanos, according to the Gemara. Okay, so to look to the next pasuk. Next pasuk tells us from Hakohen Hamashiach Yachatol Ashmas Ha'am V'Hikriv Al Chatoso Asher Chata Par Ben Bakar Tamim LaHashem LaChatos. So here, if the Kohen who is Mashiach, who is anointed, if he should sin, so here the Rishalmi Masech Tzarius explains that just like an individual has this notion, so too a Kohen as well. So the Torah Tamim explains with the Chiddush here is that you might think that since he knows how to paskin on his own, that maybe he shouldn't listen to the Beis Din. So you see here that his hora is nothing compared to that of the Beis Din. And this phrase, yechtel la'ashma sa'am, so Rashi here has a comment. That Rashi comments here, Shehein Tluyun Bo L'Chaper Aleim, that they are dependent on him to atone for them, U'L'Hasbalel Ba'Adam, that he should pray on their behalf, V'Nase Mekukal, and now they are messed up because of him. And the Medrash, or they're messed up, so this Medrash, there's a medrash that tells us that since the Mashiach ends up being, the Kohen Mashiach ends up atoning, and the Tzibur ends up atoning, so better that they should be atoned through him. And this is something that Rav Nosson Gestetner talks about in a Sefer on Chumash, that the Kadosh Baruch Hu essentially works it out, that because the people need an atonement, so therefore it's arranged that the Kohen Mashiach will also sin so that he should receive an atonement through this process, and he could represent them that they will also get a atonement at the same time. So to look to Pasuk Zayin, here we find V'nasan HaKohen Min Hadam Al Karnos Mizbach Ketores HaSomim Lifnei Hashem Asher Bo HaMoed V'yeis kol dam ha-par, yishpoch ha-yisod mizbach ha-olah, asher pesach ha-omoy. So here, this is on the west side, and not on the south side. And the Tosfos in Zvachim, Adafton Aleph, Mod Aleph, tells us that we would know this anyway, because that's the first side that is encountered. So you would assume that Eima Avir Nala Mitzvos. So Tosfos over there answers that that's only applied when you have two mitzvos, and the question is which mitzvah to do first, but not when we're talking about different places, and the question is which place to do a mitzvah in. But Tosfos in Megillah, on Daf Vav Amud Beis, so here's a little timely synergy, asks that we do seem to see this klal applied in the context of where to put something, because the Gemara there asks about when you have a leap year, when should Purim be observed? And should it be observed in the first Adar or in the second Adar? So that would seem to parallel here, that it would seem to have the same kind of application. So there it answers that you would have thought that it's not Ma'akev if you're only basing it on the idea of Ein Ma'avirin, and therefore you need this extra limud. Okay, so let's skip to, go a little bit further. So to skip to Pasuk Chaf Aleph. You find Bahutzi as Hapara Mechutza Machaneh Besarif Oso Kesher Sarif Hapara Rishon Chatas Akal Hu. So here, the Chatas Akal, Valaturim comments that right after this, the Pasuk talks about the Nasi, and that's to show that whoever could have been mocha and isn't is considered to be included in their avon. And indeed, it's followed up right afterwards with asher nasi echeta. So here, the nasi will sin, and this language of asher of asher, sorry, asher nasi echeta, of asher, excuse me, asher nasi echeta. So Rashi has a comment here that it's good. Lashon Ashrei. Ashrei Hador Shanasi Shalo Nosein Leiv Lahavi Kapara Al Shkigoso, that it's a good thing for a generation that the Nasi will care enough to atone. And that's an important model that the people should appreciate, that he's aware and that he's willing to do tshuva. And that's something that they should learn from and that they should appreciate. And here also we have some timely synergy, because as the Toldos Yitzchak points out, and Rabbi Simon quotes in the Sefer Imrei Baruch, that this has relevance to Parsha Zachar, which is also read this week, that we find that throughout this Aliyah we have the language of Im when referring to the Kohen HaMashiach, and Im called Kol Das Yisrael, but referring to the Nasi, it's Asher. So the first two are unlikely, but the king, he definitely will sin. And that's because of Gaiva. So he doesn't have anyone above him, so he's most likely to sin. And we find, as discussed, that according to some of the Rishonim, so Amalek is Davka fought by the Melech, and this is something that's discussed by the Oneg Yontif in his Akdama, because Amalek represents the Yetzihara and the Koach to make someone sing. And the king is the Iker test of Yerushamayim, because he has real Bechira, because no one is above him. So Gaiva can lead to a lack of Yerushamayim. And the king, who has no one above him, is most susceptible to Gaiva, and therefore that's why the Torah says that he is most vulnerable to the possibility of sin, and therefore that language represents that. And this battle against the Amalek represents this battle against Gaiva, and that's what this language indicates. But together with that, as Rashi tells us, that also brings the possibility of tshuva, and we should be grateful for that, that they have a king who's aware and willing to do that. And the next pasuk is a source for these exclusion of Mesasek. The Gemara increases on Daf Tesimar Aleph, derives from the language of the pasuk of Gimel, that there is an exclusion for Mesasek. And towards the end here, pasuk of Dalet, the Samach Yado, Arosh HaSoyer, the Shachar of Sol, Binkom Asher Yishchat, as Ha'ola, Lefnei Hashem, Chatasu. So commenting here on the Chatas, Rav Gifter, the Sefer Pirkei Torah, notes that a Chatas is really an Ola, just the Kohanim are a Zocha Mishulchar Gavoas. The Kohanim eat from the Korban Chatas, and the Bailim are Mechabrim, and the idea is that the sinner, the issue is that he's not able to make the Gashmias meet up with the Ruchnias, so he has to separate from the Gashmias with the Korban Ola, which is Kulo Kolol, which is completely consumed. And when he sees the Kohanim eat from the Kedusha and realize how you can make the connection, so then he himself reconnects, and that is what is able to elevate this, and he is able to therefore atone. And that connects again to the idea that the Korbanos are effective in creating an atonement by reminding us of where we are able to correct our behavior and how we're able to elevate our own consciousness. And even in the context of Ashgaga, where it's not necessarily about an intentional misdeed, but it nonetheless is about a lack of awareness and consciousness, the Korbanos are able to remind us of what's missing and to restore that lack of awareness.